Today is Thursday, November 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Poland threatens to slap more economic sanctions on Belarus as thousands of migrants continue to cross the border.
We want to relieve this tension, but if there's an escalation by the other side, the Belarusian side, we're ready to go, unfortunately, up on this escalation ladder.
Germany, France, and the U.S. urge their citizens to get out of Ethiopia as fighting moves closer to Addis Ababa.
We could see very serious urban warfare. We could see Amhara-Oromo clashes.
And authorities find the bodies of more than two dozen migrants after their boat capsized in the English Channel. We'll have those stories and more next. At least 27 migrants died trying to cross the English Channel to reach Britain. British and French officials traded blame on Wednesday after the migrants died when their dinghy deflated. Reuters correspondent Gloria So reports.
Over two dozen migrants have died while attempting to cross the English Channel from France into Britain. It's the worst disaster on record involving migrants crossing the Channel, a persistent source of tension between the two countries. Local fishermen say more migrants than usual left the French shores on Wednesday to take advantage of the calmer sea conditions. France's Interior Minister Gérald Darmanin said that the migrants' boat later deflated. Officials on both sides have traded blame for the incident. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson called on France to do more to stem the flow of migrants.
I say to our partners across the Channel, now is the time for us all to step up, to work together, to do everything we can to break these gangs who are literally getting away with murder.
Meanwhile, French President Emmanuel Macron has accused Britain of politicizing the issue for domestic gain. Regaining control of Britain's borders was a key campaign point for supporters of Britain's exit from the European Union. In a statement, Johnson said he and Macron had agreed to step up efforts to prevent future crossings. French police have arrested four human traffickers in connection with the incident. The migrants' nationalities and identities have not yet been reported.
That was Reuters correspondent Gloria So reporting. Poland has threatened Belarus with further economic sanctions and the closure of its border to all freight and rail traffic as thousands of migrants continue to try to cross the frontier. The European Union accused Belarus of creating a humanitarian crisis by ferrying migrants to the border in retaliation for EU sanctions imposed over last year's rigged election. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Facing off across the frontier, Polish border guards filmed this footage Tuesday night, purportedly showing Belarusian security forces next to a section of broken border fence. Poland's prime minister said Wednesday he was ready to escalate the response to what he called a political crisis triggered by Belarus, using innocent people as human shields.
We want to relieve this tension, but if there's an escalation by the other side, the Belarusian side, we're ready to go, unfortunately, up on this escalation ladder. For example, economic sanctions, border closure, closing border crossings for freight and rail traffic.
The EU said Tuesday it is preparing emergency legal measures on migrant asylum and return procedures.
The aim is to support member states to set up the right processes, to manage irregular arrivals in a swift and orderly way, in line with fundamental rights.
Tensions have eased in recent days after Belarus moved some migrants away from the border. Still, hundreds remain stuck in camps in freezing conditions. Several migrants have already died attempting the crossing.
The Poland no have way, the Belarusian no have a way. We can't go anywhere. We are stay here to the Europe accept us.
A report from Human Rights Watch, based on interviews with dozens of migrants, details how Belarusian forces cut the razor wire fence to help the migrants cross into Poland, where they are usually picked up by Polish border guards.
They pleaded with the Polish border guards for asylum, for international protection, and if a person does, then it's the responsibility of state authorities to process these claims. Now, in the what the people told me is that none of this happens. Rather, they're being put in vans or cars and being and then Polish border guards drive them down to specific locations at the border with Belarus, where they forced them to cross through the fence and go back to the Belarusian side.
The migrants say they are then held in open-air camps on the Belarusian side of the border.
They are not provided food or water. They're quite often violently abused by the border guards. They're extorted for money. They will then march larger groups of people back towards the Polish fence, where they will coerce them to go back into Poland. And so that's when you have this so-called ping-pong pushbacks.
Poland denies breaking any asylum laws. Belarus also denies its border guards have committed abuses. Among the latest casualties of the crisis, an unborn child miscarried by his mother as the family crossed the border. His tiny coffin was buried Tuesday in a Muslim Tatar cemetery close to the border in Poland. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The U.S., France, and Germany have joined other countries in urging their citizens to leave Ethiopia as fighting between federal forces and rebel groups moves closer to the capital, Addis Ababa. The U.N. has also announced evacuation flights for family members of its staff and the country. The presidents of neighboring Kenya and South Africa have joined calls for an urgent ceasefire. Mohamed Youssef speaks to analysts on the prospects for peace in this report from VOA's Africa News Center in Nairobi, Kenya.
The U.S., France, and Germany have joined other countries in urging their citizens to leave Ethiopia as fighting between federal forces and rebel groups move closer to the capital, Addis Ababa. The U.N. has also announced evacuation flights for family members of its staff in the country. The presidents of neighboring Kenya and South Africa have joined calls for an urgent ceasefire. As the security situation worsens in Ethiopia, there are increasing concerns about what happens next. William Davison is International Crisis Group's senior analyst for Ethiopia.
There is a real prospect of the war coming to Addis Ababa, and that could have even more terrible consequences than we've seen so far. We could see very serious urban warfare. We could see Amhara-Oromo clashes if the OLA is involved. Lots of popular resistance, obviously, to the Tigray forces, the potential for a breakdown in government authority. If there's an effort at regime change, we could see the violence against Tigrayan civilians increase and the repression rapidly. So definitely need for a ceasefire.
CNN reports the U.S. military has prepared special forces to assist its embassy workers and citizens if the security situation deteriorates in the Horn of African nation. Briefing reporters in Washington Tuesday, U.S. Special Envoy for the Horn of Africa, Jeffrey Feltman, said there was progress in getting all parties to agree to a ceasefire. Feltman expressed fears the military confrontation threatens Ethiopia's stability and unity. The Kenyan and South African presidents Tuesday also called for a ceasefire. In November of last year, armed conflict broke out in the Tigray region between Ethiopian government forces and the Tigray People's Liberation Front. Since then, the conflict has spread to other parts of the country. Tigray forces and the Oromo Liberation Army threatens to drive Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed out of power by storming Addis Ababa. On Tuesday, Abiy said he will be at the front line to guide troops against the advancing rebel groups. Tobias Wellner is a sub-Saharan Africa senior intelligence analyst with the Dragonfly Intelligence, a group that works on global security and political risks. He says Abiy's plan to lead the military on the battlefront is to keep the troops' morale high.
Is really to rally support as the government is clearly struggling to defend sort of against the advancing rebel forces. I personally think it's very unlikely that Abiy is actually going to fight himself, and it's more like a propaganda act. And it also literally means that it's a sign that Abiy will not he will fight rather than step down from his position.
On Wednesday, Ethiopia government spokesman Legis Tulu said the prime minister had arrived at the battlefront without giving details. Tulu also said Abiy's deputy, Demeke Mekonnen Hassan, is handling government activities while he's away. Werner says a victory for either the rebel groups or the government will create more rebellion in the country. He says there will be no winner in this war.
The connections between the TDF and the OLA and other rebel groups that have joined the fray is a very cautious and sort of not very strong alliance. Right now, they're all under the umbrella of opposing Abiy Ahmed. But, you know, if they need to rule Ethiopia, that's a whole other question. And then the ethnopolitics will come out and make that alliance very shaky, I think. Last scenario, stalemate. There's going to be some sort of ceasefire, but that'll be often broken.
The Tigray leadership is calling on lifting the humanitarian blockade so that more than 400,000 people can receive much-needed humanitarian assistance. The government wants Tigray forces and other rebel groups to leave areas of the country they have captured. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
In the U.S. southern state of Georgia, all three men charged with the murder of Ahmaud Arbery have been found guilty. Arbery's killers also will go on trial next year for federal hate crimes. AP correspondent Shelley Adler has more.
The crowd outside the courthouse after the three men charged in the death of Ahmaud Arbery were convicted. The verdicts caused his mom, Wanda Cooper Jones, to say,
"You know him as Ahmaud. I know him as Quez.
Yes.
He will now rest in peace."
Amen.
Also speaking outside the courthouse, family attorney Ben Crump.
"This is not a celebration. No. It is a reflection to acknowledge that the spirit of Ahmaud defeated the lynch mob." Yeah.
The three men face minimum sentences of life in prison. I'm Shelley Adler.
You're listening to VOA News. Interpol has elected a United Arab Emirates official as president, a man who has been accused of torture. We get more from AP correspondent Charles de la Desma.
Major General Ahmed Nasser al-Risi, who's the Inspector General at the UAE's Interior Ministry, has been elected by Interpol for 1 4-year term. He's been accused by human rights groups of torture and has criminal complaints against him in 5 countries, including in France, where Interpol has its HQ, and in Turkey, where the election has been held. The election has drawn angry responses from 2 Britons who filed the complaints. Matthew Hedges, who'd been in prison in the UAE for nearly 7 months in 2018 on spying charges, says this is a sad day for international justice and global policing. I'm Charles de la Desma.
Turkey's currency continues to nosedive after President Tayyip Erdogan has ignored appeals, including those from many of his own top advisors, to reverse policy and raise interest rates to save the lira. Reporter Dorian Jones, who is in the Turkish capital, Istanbul, tells me no one seems to be able to convince Erdogan to switch course.
President Erdogan has what many describe as an idiosyncratic view on how to deal with Turkey's inflation, which is running at over 20%. Now, he insists the way that you bring down inflation is to cut interest rates. Now, prevailing view around the rest of the world is it's precisely the opposite. You increase interest rates to bring down inflation. And President Erdogan has, in the last few weeks, aggressively enforce this policy, and we've seen interest rates being cut by 400 basis points, that's 4%, and that has basically devastated the Turkish lira. And in the last few days, the lira has collapsed, and in fact on Tuesday it fell by over 15%. Now on Wednesday we have seen somewhat of a recovery, a pullback of 7%. The lira has recovered some of those losses, but in the rest of the year, we've seen that the Turkish lira has fallen now by nearly 40%, and that has caused shockwaves through the economy and is causing a great deal of concern going forward, because President Erdogan is giving no indication of pulling back from this stance. In fact, he doubled on down with it. Speaking on Tuesday evening, he said that this is like the battle of the war of independence of the country. He was fighting against what he called foreign powers, and he insisted there will be no stepping back. And he said, in fact, a lower, weaker currency will help the country in terms of expanding exports and will make the Turkish economy stronger. And that has further caused growing unease in the country and internationally on which direction Turkey is heading.
And I understand that he even fired some of his top aides who strongly suggested he switch course. Is that correct?
Well, that's right. In the last 2 years or so, Turkey has gone through four central bank chiefs. Now, the central bank is meant to be independent, but that few people believe that it's the case anymore, with the central bank's chiefs just going one after another over his insistence on following this this policy of cutting interest rates while inflation is rising. And a number of also senior figures within the central bank have also been dismissed. And now the widely held view, both in Turkey and around the world, is that the central bank is now run by President Erdogan. And that only adds to the growing unease, if not panic, in some areas of the country and internationally, that the Turkish economy is heading for a catastrophe.
Does anybody know why Erdogan believes that keeping interest rates low is somehow going to turn the economy around and increase the value of the lira?
Well, it has to be said that if you have a weaker lira, then it does certainly help in exporting. And Turkey does rely heavily on exporting. It has a large automotive sector here. Many of the car giants of the world do have factories here. And also Turkey exports a lot of clothing. And that certainly will help export. But having said that, speaking to experts, the scale of the collapse of the currency, it means that the importing materials required for these products is going through the roof. And in many ways, people fear that the economy could ultimately come to a grinding halt, because no one will want to risk in producing things, because you don't know how much more the importing costs to produce those products will be going forward. And also people will hold off on paying their debts to other suppliers because they want to hold on to money. And that is a real fear, that ultimately the economy could come to a grinding halt. But having said that, Erdogan does believe that if he can cut the currency, that then there can be this economic boom, he believes. And Turkey is possibly heading into an election year next year. He has to hold elections by early 2023, but the expectation he may go earlier, and he may be hoping to create at least a short-term boom in the economy. But most experts are warning, rather than any boom, that it could bring this economy to a complete halt, on top of stoking inflation, which is already running at 20%, but people fear it can go up to 30, 35, 40, especially as many people who are selling goods are now linking their price rise to the rate of the dollar, which leads to a dollarization of the economy. And that ultimately can lead to hyperinflation, like what's happened in Venezuela.
And I can't imagine 35, 40% inflation rate. People there, you're in Istanbul, they must be devastated. What is it like for just ordinary residents?
Well, it's becoming really hard, because the biggest impact is on food prices. And I see it myself. You go to the shops every week and food prices are going up every week. And the trajectory seems to be getting faster and faster, because Turkey does have to rely heavily on imported food. There is a big drought in this country, which has hit grain production. So their expectation is that the price of bread, which is a key staple for many poor people, is expected to rise. That will only add to the pain that this country is feeling. And in fact, an opinion poll found that at least around 60% of people are struggling now to make ends meet, affording enough to eat, affording enough to pay the utility bills. And also, now we're heading into winter. Turkey is imports around 90% of its energy. Energy prices are expected to go through the roof.
That was reporter Dorian Jones speaking with me on Wednesday from Istanbul. In the second part of our conversation on Friday, Jones describes what Turkish residents are doing to try to survive during the country's economic crisis. China was behind one of the biggest hacks of all time, quietly stealing email and data from organizations, according to the U.S. and other countries. Experts say China-orchestrated attacks on strategic targets have increased in recent years. Michelle Quinn has the story.
On a January evening, the cybersecurity firm Velocity, which is always looking for anything unusual on the networks of its clients, including governments, the defense industry, and financial firms, detected an anomaly. Stephen Adair is the president of Velocity.
We were looking at what was, you know, large byte transfer, basically large amounts of data leaving one of our customers' networks. Hair in our arms raising a little bit. We're kind of alarms going off at this point.
That discovery turned out to be a stealth operation to exploit an unknown vulnerability in Microsoft Exchange, an email server used by businesses, governments, and other organizations that have large numbers of users. The hackers were stealing emails. The administration of U.S. President Joe Biden and its allies said the initial breach was the result of a Chinese state-sponsored hack. China has denied any connection to the Microsoft hack. An article in its state-run newspaper, Global Times, blamed the U.S. for cyber attacks against China. For Stephen Adair of Veloxity, some early clues in the Microsoft Exchange hack pointed to China, such as the language in some of the code, where the data was going, and the kinds of targets.
So, you know, kind of like a pure cyber espionage play to where the goal is to get information, to get data, to get email. What they want exactly and what they do with it, you know, we don't know. We can only speculate. But highly targeted operation, really under the radar.
While Russia-based hackers have been responsible for some of the biggest cyber attacks in the U.S., cybersecurity firms say that over the past 2 years, Beijing has directed more cyber operations, targeting countries in Asia as well as nations worldwide to gather social, economic, and political intelligence. In their recent virtual meeting, Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping discussed how to reduce cyber conflicts between the two countries. Josephine Wolf is a cybersecurity policy expert at Tufts University. She spoke to VOA over Zoom.
I think what you're seeing now is this realization that actually the Chinese espionage efforts never disappeared and in fact became significantly more technologically sophisticated.
In the Microsoft Exchange hack, word of the weakness got out before the company created a patch. Hacking groups from around the world were able to exploit this virtual backdoor and indiscriminately attack targets. Stephen Adair.
We got organizations from all around the world, ranging from, you know, big defense contractors and government agencies down to like small mom and pop like shops, like funeral homes, like school districts. I put that up there as one of the worst or best, however you want to describe it, of hacks probably of all time.
President Biden recently signed a bipartisan infrastructure bill into law that includes nearly $2 billion for cybersecurity. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Carol Van Dam. At least 8 people have been killed and 17 were wounded in Somalia's capital, Mogadishu, in a car bombing on Thursday. The attack targeted a United Nations security convoy. The armed group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for the bombing, which happened in the early morning hours. The blast sent a column of smoke above the city. Witnesses say gunfire echoed around the scene. Russian authorities say a fire at a coal mine in Siberia has killed 11 people. More than 40 others were hurt. Dozens of other miners are still trapped. A Russian news agency says the fire started when coal dust caught fire and the smoke quickly filled the mine via the ventilation system. Nearly 300 people were in the mine at the time of the incident in southwestern Siberia. 239 people have been evacuated. Rescue efforts were put on hold Thursday due to the threat of an explosion. The drug regulator for the European Union has authorized Pfizer's coronavirus vaccine for use on children aged 5 to 11. Thursday's decision paves the way for shots to go into the arms of millions of elementary school students, just as a new wave of infections is spreading across Europe. It's the first time the European Medicines Agency has cleared a COVID-19 vaccine for use among young children. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
When you think of what bees eat, you probably picture them buzzing from one flower to another, gathering nectar and pollen to bring back to their hives. But several species of stingless bees supplement their diets with carrion or the flesh of dead animals. Scientists have found that one family of bees called Trigona or vulture bees has evolved to completely shun plant life and use only carrion for its food. Researchers from 3 U.S. universities have found the microbiome, a collection of microorganisms in the guts of most bees, has remained constant for 80 million years. According to a University of California Riverside press release, the scientists found that the microbiome in the Trigona bees was different and also had acid-loving bacteria like those found in other carrion eaters, something that their vegetarian cousins don't have. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of Nadia Taha and the entire production team, thank you very much for listening. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.